And welcome to the Prince George Cougars CAT Scan Podcast. Leland Mack is the Director of Scouting for the PG Cougars. And welcome to the CAT Scan Podcast, Leland.
Thanks for having me, longtime listener.
Yes, well, now you're the guest. You've got a new position, Director of Scouting. This is a promotion for you. So give us your background with the PG Cougars and tell us how it became you got into this role.
Sure. I scouted a long time with the Seattle Thunderbirds at first for about 11 years. And then I was looking for a little bit of a change, and Bob and I connected, and I ended up becoming a regional scout with Prince George. And that was when I was living out in the Lower Mainland. And then I've moved to Calgary, back home to Calgary since. And, Bob wanted to take a little bit of a step back from the grind of scouting. So it's a position I've really wanted to do for a long time, and I let the Cougars know about that. And then it all kind of worked out after the draft. So here I am.
Now you're talking about Bob Simmons, the former director of scouting, but he hasn't gone away in any shape or form, and we'll be bringing him on a future podcast again. It's just that his role has been reduced because he's not going to travel as much, correct?
I wouldn't say role reduced. I would say he's still handling a lot of the player contracts and the handling the list. And the way I kind of think of it is my new role is basically building up to the draft and taking care of the draft. And then sort of post-draft, it's a lot of Bob's role where he's working with watching the players we've drafted when he can. He's helped set up training camp. He does the contracts. He does the trades. So he's still got a lot on his plate. So I wouldn't say his role is reduced at all.
Right. Yeah. How long have you been with the Prince George Cougars then?
Since 2019, summer of 2019.
All right. So 6 years with the PG Cougars. How will your role change this season compared to what you did last season?
Well, a lot more travel, a lot more games. I was a coach for a long time, so it's the adjustment of leaving coaching now and getting into the scouting side. So my role will be a lot of scouting, a lot of reports. I just got back from Winnipeg last night, was at an event there for the last 3 days. So you hit the road, you watch as many games as possible, and you do your reports, and then you kind of work with all the scouts we have, which are great, and you do meetings at the end of the year, you make your list, and you hit the draft, and that's probably the best day for all the scouts and myself. So yeah, it's just a constant little building of little data points of every player and thinking where you have them, where you think they'll be when they're in the WHL one day, and just really building that list and getting to know the kids, the families, the agents, their coaches, and just trying to build as much of a sort of resume for each player, and then you kind of decide how you like them and how they fit into being a Cougar.
Tell us briefly about your hockey background, including coaching, where you've coached.
Sure. So I grew up in Calgary. Two kind of cool things that really built my love for hockey is, one, I lived on a road called Bowness Road in northwest Calgary, and it was just a regular suburb road, but it used to be a major highway way back in the day. So the road was actually twice as wide as a normal road, but it was just a regular suburb street now. So it ended up being amazing for street hockey. So we played crossway street hockey. It was a big, big wide road. So every day, summer, winter, spring, we'd play road hockey in the front road. And that's really where a lot of love for hockey was built. And then the other side is my grandpa had a backyard rink, and it was a family tradition. He would build it every year, just one blue line in the middle. And we would go and play, every Sunday plus special events and holidays. And it was kind of a place where you'd play against your uncles, you'd play with your cousins, you'd play with random people would sort of just show up and grab a stick from the pile and play. And my grandpa ended up flooding that rink for almost 55 straight years, which was really cool.
Wow.
CBC did a little like story on him about 10 years ago.
Really?
So that was another place where I really built my love for hockey. And obviously I played hockey growing up. I never got to a super high level. Believe it or not, I was actually about in my what would be my bantam age, I was actually 4'11" and 95 pounds. So I didn't grow until I was about 18 or so. And, you know, then hockey was kind of wasn't as big of a deal playing wise. But I did play my whole life, just never got to a super high level. And then when I was about 22, my aunt called me and said she thinks I should scout. Coach. And then I started with a local team that I played with growing up here in Calgary and kept coaching, really loved it. Decided one day that, hey, like if there was something like school wise that involved coaching, I would love to do that. And the only place that had something that was Douglas College in the Lower Mainland in New Westminster. So I applied for that program. I got in, moved myself out to the Lower Mainland. Started coaching out there, and it was really, for whatever reason, it was really easy to move up the ranks. So within 2 years, I was coaching what was called the Major Midget League, or U18 AAA, with the Vancouver Northwest Giants. I did that for 2 years, then became a head coach with another team in the Lower Mainland for 4 years called the Greater Vancouver Canadians, which was a great experience. Got to coach in the Max Tournament and lots of games up in against the Caribou Cougars, which is where I kind of first saw Prince George, and then really, really was into coaching and got, then ended up with a Burnaby Winter Club. Spent 8 awesome years there at the academy, coaching all different levels. And then I sort of, as time went on and COVID went on, I met a nice girl from Calgary, and we kind of did long distance for 3 years. And then I decided to make the move back to Alberta and got married. And here I am.
Good for you. I want to get into with your coaching and scouting and all that, but I was intrigued by your grandpa. Mm-hmm. You said that there was a television feature on him, 55 years. Give us some more detail. I want to find out a little bit more. I find this really, really fascinating.
Sure. On my dad's side, it was a lot of teachers. Like, my dad was a teacher and assistant principal, and my mm-hmm. grandpa was a teacher at William Eberhardt High School in Calgary. And obviously sports was a big part of their lives. So he had this, you know, Cherokee drive. We had this little backyard, and it was a bi-level backyard. So it was like 2 levels. So the bottom level, it had like cement halfway, and then fence where the alley was the other part. So it was perfect for building a rink. And it was just such an amazing place. There was one blue line. My uncles, actually, they would play boot hockey. And when we were younger, we would skate. So we kind of had a little bit of advantage, but we didn't have the advantage strength-wise. But it was just a cool place. Just people would just show up. Like, who knows? Oh, hey, there's Cousin Joe or some guy from down the street. And people would just show up, grab a stick, jump on the ice, and start whacking a puck around. So it was just a really cool place where you get to, you know, go in the corner with your uncle, and he's going to rough you up, and you kind of learn how to protect the puck and do your best. And then one day you sort of graduate and you put the skates away, you put the boots on, and you go to boot hockey. And it was just a great time. And then obviously after the game, we'd all go up and hang out, and the uncles would have beers and we would have Coke or whatever. And, you know, sometimes my aunts would come out and play too. And grandpa would obviously come out and play. And it was just a real cool place for the Mac family to hang out.
Well, and I think a lot of folks can relate to that kind of a story, because everybody starts out and, you know, family and backyard rinks. And so it is a little bit relatable. And tell us a little bit about the TV feature that they did then.
Yeah, so CBC came out. It was funny because it was actually during Christmas and I was coaching in the Max tournament. So I was in town coaching the Max tournament. I wasn't there the day they did the TV feature, but I've watched it. It's on my Instagram. I watch it all the time. They came out. That was year 51 of him flooding it straight in a row. They interviewed my uncles. They interviewed my nephew, who's wearing a little toque for the Major Midget team that I was coaching. They just talked about how it was a great place for the family. And he was going to stop at 50, but then he decided to do one more year at 51. And I think he even did a couple more years after that, but it was just a real cool feature. We ended up, you know, when my grandpa passed away, I think in 2017, it was one of the videos we showed at his funeral, which was pretty emotional for everyone, but it was really cool. Just a really cool place.
Right. So you put a lot of time into coaching. You got up to the Major Midget level. Why get out of coaching and go to scouting?
Yeah, good question. I Probably around 2018 or just before I joined the Cougars, I started. I always liked coaching. Or scouting. I scouted for Seattle Thunderbirds for 11 years. I started with them in 2007, and I just started. You know, I love coaching, but I kind of thought like, I really like building teams too. I really like doing reports. I really like meetings. I really like giving my opinion on players. So I kind of there. I started to shift with. Hey, I wouldn't mind being a WHL head scout one day. So that's where my kind of thoughts started going. I started mentally planning it out in my head, and you know, we never know. There's only 22 at the time of those positions in all of Western Canada and the States. Now there's 23, obviously, but so they weren't easy positions to get. So you kind of have to be in the right place, right time, right team. But I just like that building of the teams, the draft, and 3 or 4 years later, see what those players are like, see if it builds to a champion. And I remembered with the Seattle days, we drafted some guys, and 5 years later, we won the championship basically with that core of players we drafted. So that was kind of a cool feeling. And then I just wanted to give it a shot. I love coaching, but there's pros and cons to every position. And I really wanted to give this head scout job a try and see how I do in it. We're a month in so far.
We're speaking with Leland Mack. He's the director of scouting for the Prince George Cougars. You're listening to the Cougars CatScan podcast. Did you have any other teams that you were looking to become director of scouting, or did you just have that strong relationship with Bob Simmons? You knew eventually you would replace him and that's the route you wanted to go, or did you have many other options with other teams?
I wasn't really considering any other options. Obviously, for me, the most comfortable place was Prince George. I know the staff. I know the players. I've known what we've done the last few drafts. I've been around Bob and see how the platform he set out for us and was comfortable for that. So, you know, Bob, the first time we ever talked, he said, you know, I'm not going to be scouting forever. So that kind of gave me a little window of, oh, there might be a chance one day that I could take over. And I talked to Mark about it a couple training camps, and he said, yeah, if Bob ever retires, then you'd definitely be a guy we'd consider. So I kind of knew that there was a chance for me, and then it all kind of came together this post-draft this year.
You say you know some of the players or all of the players of the PG Cougars, but I know that you've got special connections with some players way more than others. Tell us about that.
I coached Brock Sutch for 1 year, which was great. We won a championship together. Tarek Parasak, I coached him one game when I worked at Edge School, but we obviously saw each other around the school, and for 2 or 3 years, we'd always hang out and talk Cougars around the school. Actually, it was funny, my last day at Edge School this year, as I was leaving, as I was walking out the door, Tarek was in the gym working out, and he was the last person I said goodbye to. So it was kind of a cool sort of trip journey. Like, it's kind of a Google segue. I'm saying bye to Tarek as I'm leaving Edge and going to a new job with the Cougars. So it was kind of an interesting little segue there. So yeah, those two guys I coached for sure in the past. And as well, I coached Alexei Tichkin at Burnaby Winter Club way back in the day. So I have a good connection with him, too. So it's cool knowing these kids on that personal level.
How did the 19-year-old Sutch become a member of this season's PG Cougars?
I don't know all the details, but I think I obviously knew him and knew he was a good player. The funny thing with him was when it was his draft year, it was that year that was like the 15-year-old draft in the middle of December. That's when I was coaching him. He was small, and he was not a great skater back then, but he was very smart. And I was looking through the rosters, and I thought, oh, Brock Sutch, right. I wonder what he looks like these days. So in the summer, I just started watching video of him, and I couldn't believe how much his skating improved, and which was impressive. So, you know, Mark went and made the trade, and he got him, and so far it looks pretty good. But, yeah, we've always – Brock and I, we had a good connection. So he played in Okotoks last year, and I live in Okotoks. He lived only like a neighborhood over from me too. So we've always kept in contact. And when Mark made that trade and picked him up, I thought, okay, this is going to be good. And it's so far so good, I would say.
Yeah, well, I mean, probably even better than that. I find it really interesting because when I watched him when he first joined the PG Cougars, the first thing that struck me is, wow, this guy can skate. And here you are saying 3 or 4 years ago he wasn't that great a skater. I mean, something has really happened there.
Yeah, he did it, did a great job, whether it was training or power skating, or I'm not quite sure. You might have to ask him yourself, but it was impressive when I watched those first few videos of him playing last year for Okotoks. And then once I got access to our scouting reports, I could see from, you know, his draft year, we all said, well, skating, but he's done a great job improving it. And now he's an elite skater. Like it's very impressive that he improved that much.
You know, it's sort of interesting building teams, and the key is obviously the scouting, the draft. You're going to be heavily involved. You have been heavily involved. And it's interesting that, you know, I think a lot of us thought that the best chance for the PG Cougars to win, and we can use that word a little bit loosely, is, you know, when Height and Zimmer were, you know, at their peak. And the Cougars certainly did excel during those times. And I think that a lot of us thought that once that era was over, which it now is, there would be a drop-off and how far they would drop. And I'm not going to put too much into the early season results, but it does look, it's a different kind of a PG Cougar team. It's going to be more of a grind. But one thing I think is pretty darn clear is the Cougars are making transition from one era to another and still putting a very good product on the ice. You must see that. You must appreciate that. And you know there's pressure for you to continue to produce, to have that year in and year out.
Yeah, I think, you know, we obviously with the new landscape with the NCAA and that, it gave us the opportunity to sort of reload a little bit, where who knows what it would have been, you know, if we didn't have a Such or a Riley Ash or even Alexander Levshin has his college scholarship, and Jack Finnegan as well, where you add 3 or 4 older good players to your roster, makes a big difference in the WHL. And especially, and a lot of teams did that too, but, you know, it helped us reload with a couple older guys. You know, obviously we lost a lot last year of top players, but so, like I said, yeah, it's only 4 games in, but, that different world we're kind of living in, sort of, we took advantage of it this year. We obviously lost Ben Reich, which was a blow, but we've reloaded really nicely, and so far, so good.
Now, you talked about losing Reich, but a lot of teams lost a lot more. Tell us about your view, NCAA, how it's impacting what you're going to have to do as a scout, what you're going to have to do to convince players WHL is still the route to go.
I think as far as the U15, the sort of U15 prospects draft, I don't think it changes a lot as far as that goes, because you're still watching players. You're still going to draft the guys that you like whether they're going to stay for 1 year, 2 years, 4 years, 5 years. It doesn't change as far as like the scouting. It just actually leaves more opportunity where you're thinking you can potentially get more American players, I would say. And you're also thinking the pros of this are, you're also thinking pretty much every player is going to say yes, and they're going to want to play in the dub because that's at the top of the heap as far as the junior hockey goes. So I don't know if easier is the right word, but there's more opportunity, and you're not asking a kid if he's going to college or not, because you know that probably a gateway to college now, it would be playing in the Western Hockey League. So as far as the scouting side of it, it doesn't affect that too much. It just kind of opens up more possibilities at the U15 level. You're thinking everyone that you like and you offer a contract to is going to sign, hopefully. And it's just, but at the same time, you used to not worry about the BCHL or the AJ or SJ. You're not thinking a player from that league would come to the WHL. It didn't happen very often, where now that's kind of their next step. So you got to go out and watch those junior A games more. And if you can find a player that's 17, 18, 19, maybe 20 in the future, and you can add them, plug them in, reload them right into your roster the next year, that could be a competitive advantage too. So that's something we got to do as a staff for sure, is get out and see more of those junior A games.
All right. I want you to give the listeners an idea of what you do on game day. So give us details of You arrive at the rink. You're going to watch whatever level of hockey you're going to watch that particular day. Give us an outline of what you do during the game, what you do after the game, what you are looking for, how you look at a particular game, which would be different than a fan or a broadcaster. Give us an insight on game day, what you do when that game is on before, during, and after.
Sure. The first thing we always do is we pick a certain style of printout that we want that works best for each individual scout, and we print off the rosters, and we get the book, and we get going, and we go to the game. What's different, the adjustment from coaching to scouting for sure is, with scouting, unless you really want to be for minor hockey, you don't have to be there till 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes after the game, after warm-up starts. So you don't have to be there an hour and a half like with coaching. But so you get there, every scout has their kind of feel for where they like, and they know the arena. Some guys like sitting in the stands in the corner. Some scouts like standing against the glass. Bob Simmons is a big stand against the glass guy, as am I, if I can. We kind of, one little tweak we made this year is we kind of have a highlighted players what we really want to focus on. So if we know who those players are during the game, we kind of focus on those players, maybe just watch them, try not to watch just the puck. We really watch them, see how they position the D zone, see how they position the offensive zone, see how their skills are, see how their brain is, make little notes, usually between whistles. I try not to make notes during the game so I don't miss something. But when the whistle goes, I try and make a couple notes on a couple players, but really focus on those guys that you think might be drafts this year if it's a U15 game, and just really try and not just watch the puck and watch the player and watch him for a full shift, watch him when he goes to the bench, and then find another player out there. And if any player sort of emerges that you didn't have noted before, then you'll write some notes on that guy. And then when the game ends, you go home, there's a program called RinkNet. It's a software, so then we got to plug away at our reports. So it's kind of like homework, and it feels sort of like a homework sometimes. And sometimes you get writer's block, and you sort of save it for another day, but you eventually have to get them done. And then Bob, like in the past, Bob would see that I've done reports, or any of my other scouts have done reports, and they all go into this program called RinkNet, where you can read them, and you can see what people thought of the players, and then you kind of, oh, okay, that's interesting, and then you can kind of follow up, and it creates more discussion that way. So that's kind of the full process of scouting.
Right. And you know, a lot of people probably think they can be scouts, but there's a real art to it. Not anybody can do this, Leland.
Correct. It's something, having, you know, this is, I don't know, my 16th year as a WHL scout, and I've seen a lot of guys come and go. And I think a lot of people that want a scout, I think they just want to say they're a scout. I think they just want a black jacket, and they just want to tell their buddies they're a scout. But what scouting actually is going to the rink, grinding at the rink, having an opinion, knowing the game, and then getting those reports in. It's not, and that part isn't that glamorous. But if you have a passion, a knowledge of the game, and you actually want to go out, take notes, and then put in your reports, that guy or girl can sell for us for sure. So, but a lot of people don't. They just think it's going to the game and being like, oh, this player's good, and that's it, right? It's a lot more than that. It's a lot of a grind, but it's fun too. Like we have a great group of scouts. We have a lot of fun on the road. We get along really well, and that's a huge part of it too, right? If you're spending 12 hours a day in a rink with a group of guys, you want it to be guys that you have fun with, you get along with, you're going to have fun at dinner. Like that really matters too.
How many games do you need to see of a player before you feel you've got a real grip on the pros and cons of that player?
Yeah, that's a good question. So every scout, I think, would be different with their familiarity, but I'd say you got to watch them probably at least 4 times to get a sort of basic paint of a picture of that player. And then with scouting, obviously the year is long, so you end up seeing that player at the beginning, middle, and big tournaments along the way. So you kind of could see, if are they getting better? You're always asking yourself, are they getting better? Are they staying the same? Some, are they regressing? Have they gotten bigger? Have they gotten stronger? Are they playing power play now, what they didn't before? So you have a picture of them, you kind of get a picture after four or five viewings. Okay, this is what the player is. And then you watch to see if he maintains that or if he gets better as the year goes on, leading all the way up to the last event, which is usually Alberta Cup. And obviously, sometimes recency bias sneaks in where the player that has the plays really good at the end of the year kind of jumps up in everyone's lists. But you kind of got to take a full picture of the whole player from year end to year finish and really decide, like, if that's a player that's trending in the right direction to play in the WHL. And yeah.
We're speaking with Leland Mack. He's the director of scouting for the Prince George Cougars. You're listening to the Cougars CatScan podcast. At what point, when you are interested in a player, do you approach him and or his parents?
Well, this year will be all new with that for me. So what I'm thinking is probably once the new year hits, I want to start making those connections with sort of the top players we've prioritized, you know, have a Zoom or a FaceTime with the player and the family, you know, say hi to the family at the rink when I run into them, talk to the agents, sort of make that connection, and just to learn a little bit more about the kid and sort of, you know, get that face-to-face time where you can ask them questions, they can ask you questions about the Cougars. So that's my plan. Sort of once the new year hits, see our list of priority players and just kind of start making those connections, whether it be FaceTime, Zoom, phone call, or just meeting the parents in the stands and saying hello and maybe saying hello to the player after the game type thing. So you kind of have those connections so you're not kind of blind when you're drafting them, because that character piece is a huge piece, right? And you can only get that information. You may not get a lot of character information just watching games. You got to ask the coach, you got to ask the assistant coach, and then you got to meet the kid too to try to fill those blanks of the character side of things.
Yeah, so how much is it talent? How much intangibles when you are making an assessment?
Well, it's all of that. You know, you have to, you can't just be a great kid who can't play hockey. You're not going to play in the WHL. But you have to be able to play, you have to be able to skate, you have to be able to think. Compete is obviously a big value that the Cougars value. And then that character piece is a big part of it too. But to be honest, hockey players, there's not many bad kids or red flags in hockey. Like you don't see them very often. And when you do, they kind of stick out. So it's not like character, like most kids are good kids. There's obviously better kids and, you know, leaders, followers, but there's not that many, you don't run into that many bad kids. And if you do, everyone knows about it already kind of thing. So you kind of, then that kind of changes that player's spot on the list. But in the hockey world, your most kids are good kids, good families. So you just want to, try and see if you can find that elite sort of character makeup where they're ultra competitive. They love practicing. They're obsessed with hockey. They hate to lose. Those, like if you can get that high level character player to your team, your team's going to be really good for a long time, right? So I think most kids are great kids. But yeah, the character piece is important, but you still got to be able to play. You can't just be a good kid and think you're going to make the WHL.
Is it okay to have a little bit of cockiness for a player?
Yeah, it is. But I, like coaching days, I obviously ran into a bunch of players like that. It's okay to be confident in yourself, but then you got to go, like, you got to push that player to, hey, like, you think you're this and that. You got to go out there and prove it. You can't just talk the talk. And you know, players 14, 15 years old, their brains aren't fully developed. So they only know what they know so far. So you're going to run into some confident, cocky kids. I'd rather have a kid that's cocky or confident, really confident, than a player who's not, for sure. And, you know, as WHL goes on, it's a performance-based business. So if you can be as cocky or confident as you want, but if you don't get the job done, you're not going to play, or you're going to get traded, or you're not going to make the league. So that's the great thing once it gets to that WHL level. It's really performance-based.
Roughly in the 25-26 season, how many games will you attend? And when you are there, well, first off, let's find out how many games are you going to go, and are all the games you're going to go to, or the vast majority, going to be under 15, or are there other age groups you're going to watch as well?
The primary focus will be U15 level for sure. But like I said, this year, you know, if there's our first, if our draft picks are playing nearby, I'm definitely going to go see them play U18 as well. Bob will sometimes. And then, like I said, I'll go to some junior A games. primarily it will be U15. I'd say probably 70% of it will be U15, but you'll get out to watch some U18. You'll get out to watch some U17 because you can always list a player here or there that could help the team. You'll get out to watch Junior A. Game count? I don't know. This is my first year. I'm guessing it'll be in the 400, 500 games for sure, and probably thousands of player reports.
Wow. So in one, what would be the maximum amount of games you would see in one day?
So this weekend coming up, there's a tournament in Red Deer, and the first day, the games start at 7:30 a.m., and the last game is at 8:15 p.m., and there's no break, and there's two rinks going at every time. So that would be, I don't know how many games, and you'll bounce back and forth as the day goes on. So that would be, I don't know.
Who does that? Who wants to go? And people love hockey, but sit in a rink from 8 o'clock or 7:30 in the morning until 8 or 9 at night and then do the same thing the next day? I mean, are there really a lot of people wired to do that, really?
Yep, all those guys with the black jackets. That's why I said not everyone wants to be a scout, but not everyone can be. That's just a regular tournament for us scouts. So, you know, you throughout the day, you got to balance it a bit where – you know, when it's nice out, we'll try and go outside and go for a walk around the building, or in Salmon Arm, we do these kind of walks through the little forest in the back. You gotta stretch, you gotta sit, then you gotta stand maybe again, then sit the next game and walk around and stretch, and maybe in the middle of the day we'll just go to a restaurant for lunch, have a little break, then come back. But yeah, they're long days, but we like doing it, so there's no complaints.
So when you're talking to your buddies, and by that I mean guys that do the same job that you do for other teams, how much information do you really want to share? And how much do you sort of say, yeah, but you want to keep some stuff to yourself because you really want that guy and you don't want the other team to maybe, you know, take him away from you? How much does that come into it?
Yeah, there's guys with definitely looser lips and guys that are more tight-lipped out there. You don't want to, you're all in the same rink, you all know what you're here to do and here to see, but you don't want to give away too many what you're thinking, especially as it gets closer to the draft. Everyone's a lot more looking for tidbits of who you might draft or what you're going to do. And like I said, guys are more loose-lipped than others. I'm sure there's guys that I know well, but I'm not going to go and say, this guy's really good, we really like him. I'm not going to go and say anything like that myself. But some guys, they'll tell you everything they think about a player on other teams. And you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess we know that team likes that player. I'll try and be a little bit more tight-lipped with other teams for sure.
How difficult is it finding that high-end player when you don't have one of the top 10 picks? Now, not very often are you going to get a Carson Carls like you did middle first round, and most people thought he wouldn't be there, and we all know the talent and the level he is at, way above where he was picked. And if that draft was to be done again, he wouldn't have been there for the PG Cougars. Well, because the Cougars are a strong team, they don't get the top picks. And because of that Rice trade, you're going to lose a first-round pick here pretty soon. So how difficult is it when you're a good team and don't get the best selections?
You have to get the best player you can at the spot you're at. So I've actually never in my years with Seattle, my years with Prince George, I've never had a year where the team I was with didn't have a first round pick. So this will be new for me. Maybe you can't as much focus on, oh, let's take the best D or let's take the best forward. You kind of, if our first pick ends up being in the second round, then we just have to pick the best player. And as far, and I know a lot of teams say best player available, but it's got to be best player that is the best Cougar, the one that we think has the best Cougar attributes. So yeah, it's tough, but you know, there's players play that are third round pick, second round pick, fourth round, you know, Tarek Parasak was a fourth round pick. Brock Sutch was a fifth round pick. So there's lots of talent out there. So you have to make it work with the picks you have, right? And then hope that the 09s from last year and the 08s from the year before are strong as well. And, you know, lots of changes over the years. You can list players, trade players. So Yeah, you know, it is what it is this year, but really we have to go with the best cougar available this year if our first pick is the second round.
Yeah. Now, some guys, though, you know, like Parizak and such, they were in the COVID draft. So there was a bit of a break there. You don't often get that because in COVID, nobody saw anybody or they had to watch on these tiny little screens on their computer. So that was a bit of an anomaly that you really don't get.
Yeah, that's true. It was a different year. We only had September to December 9th to get out and watch as much as we can, but we were wearing masks and not every rink you could go into, and a lot of video that year. A little bit different this year. Back now that we're back to normal, but in the end, you got to find players with whatever picks you have, and that's really my job and a scout's job is to do the best job and find the best guys. Obviously, I think it'll be a little different hypothetically this year because they might be getting rid of the U.S. draft, I've heard rumors of, so there'll be a lot more American players, so maybe there's more, the draft becomes deeper if it's just one draft, so if that happens. So it gives an opportunity for sure.
How receptive are you to hearing from members of the public, people that you know, hey, Leland, I know about this guy, he's up in Whitehorse, he is in the Northwest Territories, he's in, you know, an outpost in Alberta. You got to look at this guy. I know. Do you ever get that? Do you hear that often? And what do you say?
Yeah, you get that a lot. You get a lot of emails sent to Bob and myself with, hey, you watch my son play, or I represent this player and you got to watch him play. I'm not going to take anyone's word for it and draft a player or trade for a player sight unseen. So if someone says that, that's fine. I'll go and watch them play, whether it's video or live if I can, and I'm going to be the ultimate judge and our scouts will be the judge of if that player can play or not. But you get tips here or there, and sometimes it works out, like, you know, with Sean, the late Sean Murray and Bob with Ravensburg, and that worked out pretty good for us. But you still got to watch the player. You can't just take someone on their word and sight unseen draft or trade for a player or list a player, because you have to trust your eye first. Like, I trust my eye and what I think before I'm going to trust just someone off the street mentioning a player to me.
But what you are saying is you are willing to listen if somebody has a suggestion. You're not just going to brush them off.
For sure, because to be honest, is maybe you get 40 players that are dogs, but maybe that one 41st guy, maybe that actually is a player. So if you just like deleted that email or didn't bother, like, and then all of a sudden 2 years later that player ends up being a great player on a different team, you're going to be going, man, like, I found this email, I saw it there, like, I should have watched him. So you'll have those regrets. So you have to sort of go after all those leads if you can and research them.
Every player in the WHL wants to make the NHL. I haven't heard of one that would not like to go there. What about you? You are a scout, a head scout, a director of scouting at the WHL. Are you looking at NHL for your future?
I just wanted to become a WHL head scout. That was my goal for the last 4 or 5 years. So I'm just really excited to do this for now. You know, everyone would love to make the NHL. I've had a little bit of a sort of inside peek. Probably my best friend, Kevin Peterson, he scouts for what's now Utah for the last 5 or 6 years. So we talk pretty much every day about scouting or the life. And the life of an NHL amateur scout is, it's pretty tough. It's a lot of days on the road, 2 weeks straight. Sometimes you're jumping from PA to Saskatoon to Regina to Brandon to here to there, and you're gone. And you're not, you know, you're not going to training camp when you're an NHL scout and hanging out with Sidney Crosby and the coaches and stuff. It's a lot different in the NHL scout. Obviously, I think the money's great and the prestige of being an NHL scout is great, and maybe one day. But right now, honestly, I'm just so excited to be the director of scouting for the Cougars. That's where my feet are right now.
Now, you are going to be doing a lot of traveling. So how does that affect family life when you're away and you're at the rink so much?
Yeah, great question. So I've talked to my wife a lot about it. With coaching, in the last bunch of years, I would be gone. for different tournaments and different events coaching, but this will be more than that for sure. But like I said, the first 3 years with my wife and I, we were long distance. She was in Calgary and I was in the Lower Mainland. So we did that a bit. The biggest thing my wife's been saying to me is, you better make sure the dogs get walked. So you better find someone to walk the dogs.
Yeah.
So that's one of my main priorities, is to, you know, find a neighbor or someone nearby that can walk the dogs on those weeks where we have, she has three stepkids of mine, and they're at our house every second week. So if they're there, they'll be able to help with the dogs. But if it's a week where I'm gone and they're at their dad's house, I'm going to have to sort out the dog walking. So that's my biggest issue. But, you know, I try and call her, FaceTime her every single night I'm on the road, and text her throughout the day. So that'll be best, and maybe bring her back some Starburst and stuff like that she likes to help ease it over.
What about, is she a hockey nut or not?
She likes hockey, but myself being hockey all day, and her son is really into hockey too, so she kind of doesn't like it as much lately because we're talking about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But she likes hockey for sure.
Yeah. Now, are you strictly all WHL? Like, do you pay attention to the NHL? Do you pay attention to other leagues? I know now you have to pay attention to the BCHL and those leagues because you're looking for players. But just as a general interest, you probably wouldn't even have time to look at NHL games and start cheering for that.
For sure. I mean, we'll see. My old boss used to say, in Seattle, he said he barely ever watched the NHL. And I'm thinking, what? Because I'm a big hockey fan, and I love watching NHL for sure. And when I was coaching, when I'm watching NHL games, I'm watching to, you know, see sort of systems they do or little plays that I could make into a drill. So when I'm watching an NHL game, you know, starting, I guess, tomorrow, I won't be watching as a coach. I won't be looking for little, like, systems that I could try with my team. So I probably won't watch NHL as much, to be honest, because I'll be watching so much U15 WHL, which will be okay. My wife probably won't mind that I'm not in the basement watching NHL every night during the week because we have the center ice package, but I probably won't watch as much NHL.
When it comes time for the draft, there is going to be you, Bob Simmons, Mark Lamb, and then others, and everybody is going to have an opinion. And in the past, you know, Bob has been very, let's go my way. And he's admitted that. Like, you know, if you've looked at a player, how is this going to work? Do you think that you're going to have the say? Bob's going to have final say? Obviously, Mark's going to not see the guys. He's going to trust you guys. Or are you and Bob going to come to a conclusion before everybody else gets together so you guys are on the same page? How is that going to work?
Well, Bob and I have talked about this a few times, and he's said, you know, the draft is my job, and he said that his biggest word of advice to me was, you know, work with the scouts and get a sort of consensus, but in the end, if it's the guy that you want, like Leland wants, then take the guy Leland wants. And Bob was great at getting us together and listening to all our opinions and using them a lot. And then there's sometimes where he went with his guy, and but then in the end, it's all our guy. Whoever we take is our guy. So Bob's advice was, yeah, of course, ideally, we all are on the same page and love it, and in the end, we will be. But if there's a guy you have a real hunch for, then just take him and no regrets. So that's what I'll do.
There's always guys that you didn't select. Oh, you look back. I don't know whether it was years, months, whatever. You say, maybe we should have got that guy, and that guy really turns out to be quite the player. Do you have instances like that you want to share?
Sure. Well, back when I was with Seattle, the one I always remember is it was one of my first years. It was the 95 birth years, which was strong for defense. And there was a player on the Calgary Royals named Josh Morrissey.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to go with a different route with a really big, really good defenseman named Jared Hoff, who played a long time in the WHL, played 4 or 5 years, I believe, and was a strong player.
Right.
But not quite Josh Morrissey. So that was something we talked about as a staff in Seattle. And we kind of like went, wow, we passed by Josh Morrissey. But the cherry on the sundae of that draft was in the third round, we drafted a player named Shea Theodore.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So was probably equally as good of a WHL player and obviously an excellent NHL player too. So in the end, that worked out great. But we would always joke, like, what if we had Morrissey and Theodore?
that would be fun.
That's what I always think of back in my Seattle days. And I was, like, that was my second or third year scouting. So I was pretty new to it as far as giving, you know, banging the table hard opinions on players. But that's what I always think of. But, you know, Shea Theodore ended up being a great player. The player we drafted in the first round was a good, solid player that played until he was 20. So that's a good thing, too.
Yeah. Now, is there a player that sticks out in your mind, other than maybe the example you gave, where you got somebody, didn't necessarily have to be round one, could be round two, could be round six or seven, where you got somebody and it was like the talk of all scouts, like, oh, I can't believe we ended up getting this guy and he turned out to be this. And not about Ravensburgen, because that his was a whole different case because he wasn't drafted and you got him the next day and all that. But somebody that we haven't talked about or maybe not known that, you know, as a scout, you say, hey, I can't, you know, you guys are all high-fiving after, whether it's months, years, whatever, later, discussing that, hey, you got this guy, and he was even better than you thought.
Well, the most recent example is with our 08 draft. So we took Caden Lemire, Dermot Johnston, and Towns Kazicki all in the second round. And I know every team says they didn't expect them to be there. We did not expect all three of those players to be there in the second round.
Right.
So I don't remember the order. I think it was Lemire, Johnston, and then Kazicki. I'm not sure, but we couldn't believe that those three players were all available in the second round. And we were so ecstatic that day in the draft room getting those three guys. Like, forget about, you know, Carson Carroll's with our first pick, but to get those three players in the second round, I honestly, and the group didn't think any of those guys would be available. And, you know, they're still young in their WHL careers, but they look like they're all going to be great players for us.
Yeah, and they're all 17. And that's when we talk about, you know, transition from one era to another. And that's why it's all the scouts. That's about the draft. That's the way you do it is you have to build through the draft. And the majority of the teams do that. The one team that will be an exception this season will be Kelowna, because they've got to have a product for the Memorial Cup. So they're not going to be thinking in terms of long range. But for just about everybody else, like the Cougars, you want to have a good product this season, next season, and you want to continue to build. Now, I'm not saying that Kelowna doesn't want to have good players in the future, but their situation is a little bit different than the other teams and how they would look at it and how trades are going to develop this season and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And maybe the other team that isn't built through the draft right now would be Penticton. Well, they're only built through the expansion draft,
right.
And they've had a great start so far. But yeah, you know, hosting a Memorial Cup is a big deal. So you got to kind of push all your chips in and plus. So, you know, Kelowna's done a great job getting some good players so far, and we know they'll be active getting more as the year goes on for sure. So, yeah, that's a different case. But I've noticed over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years that those teams that really they push all their chips in, they really the following year try to, like, recoup as many picks. So
yes.
Any good players they have remaining that next year, they'll trade and get first, second, third, fourth, fifth round picks so that they could kind of recoup all those and get those cupboards back full. So it's kind of been an interesting thing where it's not just push your chips in, go for it all, and then 4 years of being a bad team. Right? That's how it used to kind of be. I feel like teams are quicker to recoup as many picks as they can so they can get back those prospects back in their system.
We've covered a wide range of topics with scouting. Is there anything that we haven't touched on with scouting that maybe, you know, the public would still be surprised at, or maybe, you know, something behind the scenes? And I know you've shared a lot, but is there anything else that you can sort of tell us about scouting and what is involved, or something that, we haven't discussed yet that would be of interest?
Sure. Maybe how I became a scout was actually an interesting story. So I was a young coach living in the Lower Mainland. And one day I went through all the WHL websites to see if any of the coaches had their email addresses available. And the only team that did at the time was the Seattle Thunderbirds. So I emailed the coach of Seattle. His name was Rob Sumner.
Right.
And he actually emailed me back. And I asked him coaching questions, and he sent me three or four paragraphs about coaching. I don't know, it was little drills or something. And then we sort of had a relationship just purely by email for the next couple of years, which was cool. And then out of nowhere, a year later, I think we didn't talk for like a year. And then out of nowhere, he just phoned me and said, "Hey, you want to scout for Seattle?" And I was like, "Oh, I never thought about scouting, but yeah, I'll give it a try." And that's kind of how I got into scouting, which was pretty cool. And as a young, eager coach that never had, you know, an amazing playing background or anything, that was kind of me grinding away and creating a relationship with Rob. And then it ended up to scouting, and then that led to now where I am now. So, you know, and Rob is actually a scout now, believe it or not, with the Flames. He's pretty high up with the Flames. I think he's like assistant head scout or something with the Calgary Flames. So, yeah, that was a cool story of me kind of trying to create a network and build some contacts, and then end up me getting a scouting job with Seattle. And then here I am, director of scouting 14 years, 16 years later, or whatever it was. So that's kind of a cool story of how I started in scouting.
What advice then would you give someone that has no experience, that would like to get into coaching, that would like to get into scouting, or maybe they know someone and, you know, they've got what we would call, you know, hockey knowledge. They can skate, but they're not pros. They're not the greatest player, but they've got an insight, or they've got a feel for the game, but they don't know where to start, like you did. You emailed all these. What advice would you give that person or somebody that, hey, I know somebody like that, and I would like to see them try to start in that area? What's the advice for them?
That's an easy one. Go to the rink. Go to the rink, watch the games. You know, in today's world, you could become what you call a public scout, where you could sort of give your opinions publicly on X or whatever. There's a bunch of guys like that now where you're kind of showing everyone your knowledge or giving your opinions out there publicly. But before that, it's get to the rink. You know, if I'm a WHL scout and I'm like, hey, I've seen that same guy at the rink for the last 3 months, like, and he's not with a team, like, but he's always there watching, like, like that. You know, that would be a way to show people that, hey, you're committed to the grind of watching games, giving your opinion. Like, that would be my best advice. Go to the rink.
Right.
Put on your jacket, go to the rink.
And then how do you, would you suggest to make contact with somebody if you didn't have any real contacts?
Yeah, I mean, the world is small, so there's, you know, there's X, there's LinkedIn, there's, you know, just emailing a team, like a, you know, the general like team info kind of email address. It's just anything you can do, or know somebody that knows somebody that you can get a contact and reach out. Like for me, and Bob warned me about it before I got it, I probably got 25 messages of guys wanting to scout once I got the job. And
really?
23 of them I've never met before. So it's not hard for people to find your contact information, I guess.
Right. So did you get back to these guys, or just say you didn't have any room, or what happened there?
Yeah, I got back to, I think, all of them and said, you know, I just got the job. I wasn't going to get my feet wet and see, or some of them it was like, hey, we already have a scout in that area, so we don't have space, or whatever the scout conversation, wherever they were from, it was kind of more like, oh, we already have a guy there, or we don't have a guy, or don't need a guy there, or that kind of thing. And I, like I said, like, it's so important that personality piece of a scout when you're hiring them. Yes, they have to know the game and grind to do the reports, but they also have to be someone you want to hang out with. So this early in the game for me, I'm not 100% comfortable hiring someone I don't actually know at this point. So I'd have to sort of build a relationship with someone and then want to bring them on, because you want someone that fits in with the group. And if it's someone you don't actually know when you hire them and they're not a good personality, that's a scout that doesn't last long with the Cougars. That's what I was thinking.
Can I get you to give us general wages of scouts? I'm not asking for your wage or anything like that. I think people would be interested, like, what do scouts get paid? Like, what do head scouts get paid? Like, what do NHL scouts, what a director of scouts, like, what is the pay? How much is volunteer? How much is pay? How much is honorarium? How does that all work?
Yeah, good question. And it's honestly tough to answer because we don't know what other teams people make. Like, we don't, scouts don't share their, what their regional scouts make or what their head scouts make. So you really don't really know. You know, for some scouts, I'm sure it's a couple $100 or $300-$500 a month for the scouting months kind of thing. Plus you get, if you know, if you stay in a hotel or you go to get a meal, that's covered by all the teams, for sure. But it's not a lot. It's, you know, people, when I was a regional scout for Cougars in Seattle, people would ask me like how much I make. And I'd say it's not a full-time gig where I'm making money off of it. That's for sure. It's more just a couple, few $100 a month for the scouting months that kind of you just throw in the pot. And it's not a money-making gig to be a regular scout in the WHL. That's for sure.
Right. And even now, but there are bonuses if, obviously, scouts discover players that turn out to be, you know, top end players. There's bonus structures in for that generally?
Not that I know of. I mean, maybe some places have it, but I haven't heard a lot of scouts say there's a lot of bonuses. I'm sure at the NHL there is.
Okay.
But actually, I know at some NHL scouts that a friend of mine used to scout for Pittsburgh, and when their two cups, in the 2016, 2017, every round they would win, he would get some sort of bonus. So he would jokingly text us, like, when they won the first round, he went, "Oh, just got a new couch." And then the second round they won, he said, "Oh, gonna renovate the kitchen now." Like, he would make those kind of jokes about once he got his bonuses. But I'm not sure for WHL. I couldn't comment on that.
Did he eventually get a car after they won the Stanley Cup then?
No, he got the Stanley Cup ring. That's what he got, two of them.
Yeah, I know. There's no substitution for that. Well, I'll tell you, Leland, it has been very enjoyable, very insightful, and we wish you all the best. Anything that you want to add, anything that you want to say to the Prince George Cougar fans in your new role about this team, anything in particular that we haven't stated so far, or any message you would like to leave as we get ready to sign off this podcast?
Well, I love the vibe at the CN Center. I try not to miss any games watching online, and hopefully I can get to a few games live. But I love the current culture of that rink, the fans, the Cougar chants. You know, the building's packed a lot of nights. Like, it's become a place to play, and a place that away teams definitely fear. So I keep the Cougar chants going, keep the whiteout going in the summer. And we, as scouts, we really all love watching the games online and feel really, with how well the crowd is now, it makes us feel like we're an even bigger part of the team and makes us proud to be Prince George Cougars. So thank you to all the fans, and keep it going.
And thank you to you. And we'll keep in touch throughout the season. We'll have you back on a future CAT Scan podcast. All the best.
Thanks, Hartley.
You bet. Leland Mack is the director of scouting for the Prince George Cougars. You have been listening to the Cougars CAT Scan podcast. Have a great one.